Hello, and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malazan read-through podcast. That's right, we're back. Book two, keeping the energy up. My name is Peter Bond. I've read each book in the main series. However, my two co-hosts are reading the series for the first time. With me today is my friend and closest confidant, India Jones.
Hello, morale is high, energy is also high.
And he is a shape-shifting bear who just dropped in to say hello. It's Joshua Dean Baker.
Tis I. I like honey and hibernating.
I mean, it's not that untrue, you know?
Yeah, my girlfriend walked to me today and I was just fully asleep on the couch. It was great.
You like honeys and honey.
I do like honeys and honey.
Did you have were you like Pooh Bear and you had a big box of honey you were
sleeping Yeah, and I was with? Naked from the waist down, you know, the usual.
Oh my God. So we're here. We're starting Dead House Gates. We're finally into it. I think we're all excited. We spent a long time talking about Gardens of the Moon, and we're all excited to talk about book two and kind of start it up. Wow. And it sounds like we're going to get right into it because I don't think.
Just do
I'm
it.
I'm looking at their faces. It doesn't seem. All right. And let's get into it.
Just a minor correction, Peter. I think that there are only two excited people in this podcast, and I'm not one of them.
You just said the energy was high and hope was high.
Yes, seconds ago, you said morale was high. End quote.
I was just saying hello.
All right. Well, let's summarize. Prologue. In the imperial capital of Unta, the nobility is being culled for a third time. Nobles are dragged into the streets to face the mobs. A priest of Hood, covered in flies, approaches three prisoners. Haboric Lighttouch, a former priest of Fenir and historian. Bowden, an imposing thug. And Felicin Perrin, Gnoyce's youngest sister, who has been torn out of her house. Felicin is panicked, scared as they are paraded down the street after the priest of Hood offers an omen. Felicin's oldest sister, Tavor, has been named adjunct after Lauren's death in Darujistan. Tavor rides through the crowd, escorted by her entourage, overseeing the chaos. The mob start to throw bricks and attack the nobility. Sacking and looting will soon follow. They break through, threatening Felicin and Haboric. The thug Bowden kills the Lady Gayson as an offering to the mob. The guards soon show up and they are allowed to pass. Felicin survives the mob and boards the slave ships. So the Gardens of the Moon prologue starts in Unta and we see Gnoyce having as a young man, and now Deadhouse Gates, we begin in Unta once more. However, things are quite different, and we are meet up with Felicin, one of the other Perrin sisters. Josh, you're really thrown right into it. What'd you think of the prologue?
Okay, so a couple quick questions on things that you said that maybe I didn't quite get. So this is the third culling of Imperial nobles. Yes,
Lassine likes to keep a fresh house.
Okay, and so is that like over a long period or like in recent history? Well, I mean, it's gotta be relatively recent. She's not been the empress for long.
Lassine's, this is her 10th year on the throne.
Okay. Yeah, so isn't it every 3 years that she does it?
Yeah.
Why would you be a noble then?
Right?
Well, you were born it, I guess. I don't know.
But like, why would you not like be like, I'm good, I don't want to be murdered in the streets.
Because you're like rich nobility.
Yeah, and also, wasn't Falavolo, what is her name? What?
Felicin.
Felicin. Well, doesn't she say at some point, like, that she and her family were able to, oh wait, she wasn't it last time. I thought they hid last time, she said. No?
I'm unsure.
She's like, we were in our houses with the door closed, but I guess maybe that's because she wasn't a noble. Wait, was she a nobility person?
She was a noble, but this time the culling is being led by Tavor, so I guess it's a little different.
Okay. Well, regardless of that, I think that this was such a good prologue. Like, I picked up Dead House Gates, and it's a bigger book than Gardens of the Moon, which is not a small book.
It is.
So I was like, oh, this is going to be a tough boy. And the prologue really did a good job of just, like, getting me right into it. So I liked it. Also, These three people are the dream team, and I cannot wait to keep seeing them. Hopefully none of them die immediately.
Yeah, what? I thought that one of them did die immediately.
Well, the old lady did, but not Hebrick, Baldin, and Felicin. The old lady bit it hard.
I thought that was Felicin that was biting it.
No, Felicin bit nothing.
Oh, because then I was like, okay, well that, all right, well there we are. Off to a good start.
Felicin, like, bumps into, like, she's, Lady Gayson's, like, an old nobility friend. And Felicin's like, oh, yo, another noble. And then she, like, mad bites it, and Felicin's all afraid.
Well, I don't know if she bites it so much as she's ripped apart physically by Baldin.
That was the most disturbing thing that I have ever had to listen to in my life. It was like he grabbed her and he tried to crush her vertebrae by grabbing her neck. I was like, what?
Yeah, it's pretty, like, when you do something so awful that a blood-crazed mob is like, oh, that's how you know you really did something.
It was disturbing. Wait, but no, but who? I thought some big one large man killed her, is what I thought.
Baldin is his name.
Yes, the thug that kind of walks with them and mostly protects them for the whole walk.
Yeah. Well, he protects himself, too.
He killed that lady by breaking her neck.
I think he also uses the chain to saw her head off.
Yes,
yeah.
then he pulls it off. Yep.
Oh, hey, I'm reading some notes we have. The call is I understand it more now. So it's like,
great. Explain it to me, please.
Okay. It seems like it's not called. Oh, it's the triannual calling of nobles. It's just like every few years she like pinpoints a few houses to kind of scapegoat and claims they've been treasonous, and then uses that to uses their death and enslavement as kind of a way to like placate the lower classes while also stealing all of their shit to pay for her stuff.
Mm. And it's kind of made out to be that Tavor feels a need to, now that she has been appointed adjunct, like subject her own house to this after Gnois has kind of gone missing on Genabacus with the Dujek's army.
That's and now, their brother?
Yeah.
Shut the fudge.
Also, listen, we've learned some things. Gano S. Let's just commit to the bit right now. We know his name's not Gnois.
Mm. You can say, Josh, you can say it however you want. I'm gonna go with Peter,
and you said the same exact thing. You said you can say whatever you want, but I'm not.
I'm going to say Gnois now because so many people have been like, hey, idiots. You won, Internet.
All right. Anyway, Josh, I agree. I think the prologue is really disturbing, and it's a frightening way to be thrown in. And I think Erison does a great job of like rooting you.
I didn't say any of that. It was a romp for me, man.
I liked it too. I just think it does such a great job.
I never used the word terrifying. You're putting words in my mouth.
I think it does a good job of putting you in Felicin's point of view. You know, it starts and you're in the streets with her.
He does
and
use
you're
a lot of
panicked,
like, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and right. I think you feel the fear that she is feeling.
Agreed.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. Well, let's keep on moving then. Chapter 1. On Seven Cities, we meet Mappo Runt and Ikarion. Mappo, a full-blooded Trell, travels with a half-blooded Jagut across one of the deserts of Seven Cities. Together, they notice the demon across the sands, an Aptorian. They observe the remnants of an ancient civilization and talk about Soul-Taken and Divers, shapeshifters who are searching for ascendancy. They are approached by six wolves, the Divers Relandris. Relandris, however, backs away, not wishing to fight the duo. Diker, an Imperial historian, waits in the harbor of Hisar. Poltane, the former leader of a rebellion, and the horse-riding Wiccan are arriving by boat. Poltane is to serve under High Fist Pormqual to help stave off a growing rebellion in Seven Cities. Dyker awaits the Wiccan's arrival with Malak Rel, a blood magic using priest who is a crucial advisor to High Fist Formquall. Dyker laments the messy politics of the Empire's slipping grasp over the continent. Pulp, a Malazan mage, arrives, and we watch as a fight almost breaks out between the new Wiccan warriors and the Hisar Guard. Coltane stops the commotion. We catch up with Fiddler, Crocus, Kalam, and Absalar. Their boat is nearing Seven Cities. They battle with the Denrabi and then arrive on the continent. Spending the night together, Kalam recalls his history in his homeland. Both Kalam and Quickben are Seven Cities natives and fought against the Malazan conquest many years ago. Kalam even guided the Bridgeburners across Raraku in an attempt to chase Quickben. Crocus presses Fiddler and Kalam why they have come to Seven Cities, that they are supposed to be taking Absalar back to Itko Khan. They have come to Seven Cities because a rebellion is about to start. A rebellion that will challenge the Empire. Kalam, Quickben, and Fiddler have schemed to go after Lassine. So, Inge, we're here. We're on Seven Cities, a completely new continent, and we meet Mappo and Ikarium, a pair of wanderers. We meet them in more in Chapter 2, but this is our kind of first taste of the continent. We're thrown in. We meet these people. They talk to some shapeshifters. What's your read on all this?
Okay. Well, first, I want to start off by saying I totally understand why I had a hard time with the audiobook in the beginning. I just want to interject here, because I had the same issue today when I was listening to it. If you don't fully pay attention to the names, you forget who's talking, because now he's using the same voices he used to use for other people, obviously, for new people. So now I'm getting so confused.
Sure, sure.
So that's a pain point for me right now, which is going to explain why these first chapters were so confusing. But that's okay. I just have to get used to their names and their voices.
Yeah, it's a whole new setting and a new cast to kind of learn.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so let's start off with Ikarium. Yeah.
Mappo.
Yeah, Mappo, fine. Can we just discuss why he's green? Is he an
Ikarium?
Alien? Yeah.
He's a half-blood, he's a half-jagged. He's a mixed-race person.
Oh, like me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I was confused at that. I was like, because everybody seemed to be in the other one more or less either human or bone. This was a little strange. All right. So now demons.
Yes.
Can we get into that?
They're just around. I don't know how much I could offer. You know, they're just sometimes they're there, you know?
They just, since when though? Have they always been here?
Last book, they were around sometimes.
Oh, I didn't realize that either, then.
No, he fights Amanda Rake fights a demon at the end. There's the demon in the middle. There's the demons at the Battle of Pale.
Well, I thought that those were just historic people.
No. What? No.
What?
Like I thought they were just, like, you know, like, people that died 1,000 years ago and then came back. And I didn't
Do you mean ghosts?
No!
They're
like, the bone people.
Oh, no,
like an ancient race.
No, the Talana Mass aren't demons. No.
You're blowing my mind.
The Talana Mass are bone people.
Correct.
Yeah, they're bone
but
people.
But Amanda Rake fates a little... Someone sent us fan art of him fighting a literal demon in the streets.
I just thought that it was a person that had magic powers.
No. It's the Galen Demon Lord.
Okay, well, all right. Moving right along.
This is another demon.
Okay. So why do they want to follow him?
The demon, you mean?
Yes. Like, why do they decide, like, yeah, let's go after this guy?
Josh, you know?
No. I mean, my only guess is that he's a half-blood jagged and that people probably want to know where he is, but...
I thought this guy was a half-blood jagged.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, so she was talking about the demon.
Yeah. Are they hunting the demon or is the demon hunting them?
They're hunting the demon.
They're not really hunting the demon. The demon's just around, and the two of them are like, well, what's this demon doing here? Kind of random.
Yeah, they don't kill it, do they?
No.
They just kind of leave it be.
But they
follow
him. And
then they talk to some shapeshifters. Oh, well, they notice him for sure, yeah.
All right, well, Well, I guess I thought that was going to turn into something, but it didn't. Yeah, feeling a little discouraged to start, but it's fine. It's fine.
Josh, what did you think of Mappo and Ikariam and their conversation with the shapeshifter?
Oh, wait, which shapeshifter conversation?
The soul taken.
This first one, Divers Valandras.
All right, okay. Well, let me first say that Mappo, whichever, is like the least intimidating name ever.
Yeah, it's like
and
a clown.
He's like, but he's like a giant, right? He's like a freakishly tall
he's like,
guy.
Isn't he 7 feet?
He's humongous.
Yeah, he's a Ikariam 7 feet, but Mappo's also a really big dude.
Like, I just like, oh, hey, a Mappo. It sounds like a little fun gnome or something. And it's just like, no. But anyway, the meeting. Okay, so this immediately answered the questions I had from the first book, which was at the end when there's fucking dragons and they're called Soul Taken, right? And it's just what does any of this mean? Well, now I know that Soul Taken are shapeshifters. Now, how they are and what their whole deal is, not sure yet, but I know they're shapeshifters. So that was interesting. And also, divers are also shapeshifters, but maybe stronger. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. I like that this isn't a half-blood jaghead tyrant who's just trying to murder everyone. He seems like he's pretty chill.
He's of substance.
He's a chill jaghead.
He's a man of substance.
And I like that. And we see a little bit more in the second chapter, but it's a very interesting dynamic of, like, these two are traveling together, but, like, Mappo's definitely kind of unsure of why he's traveling with the jaghead, who is probably going to be the death of him, it seems, is what his thoughts are. So that was interesting.
Yeah. And that's exactly, not to get back on the Gardens of the Moon, but that's exactly why I think this all the Soul Taken stuff, like, especially in this book, shapeshifters are a big part of this book in some way. So, like, all the Soul Taken talk in that one, it's just, I don't know, it just kind of flows into this, I feel. Mm-hmm. Josh, we then go to the city of Hisar, and we see Diker, and we kind of watch and meet all, we learn a lot about Seven Cities politics and the Empire's struggling grasp. What's your read on the Imperial situation here on Seven Cities and Diker?
Number one, I'm really glad we do this podcast because I was trying to say his name as Duiker, and it was dumb sounding in my head.
I always said it Duker. And then...
Yeah, but that's not great either, because why is there an I? Yeah, I'm glad it's
just
Diker.
A crapshoot. This is what the audiobook said.
Yeah, no, it didn't. I thought it said something else. I thought it said, like, Diker or something.
Well, I'm going to go... Maybe Diker. I like that. Diker. All right. He's very interesting. I'm, like, kind of curious about him, because we've already met one Imperial historian who's, like, pretty anti the Empire. So I'm curious... And I'm very curious about him. You know, he's very neutral in a lot of ways, so I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see where he goes. Malik Rel is instantly one of my least favorite characters I've ever met, and it took like a second, and it was very impressive.
Why?
Fuck that dude. He's like a slug man in the back, just trying to work his machinations. Like, fuck him.
Are you a fan, Andia?
I'm indifferent as of now.
Yeah.
I don't have fan favorites until at least halfway through.
And then in terms of the Imperial situation, so like it's really interesting because at the beginning of Gardens of the Moon, the Empire seems like this unstoppable machine, right? Like they literally destroy a city and nearly take down a moon that's led by an immortal god, basically, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like the Empire is so good. But by the end of the book, the Empire's a little bit incompetent sounding because, like, they, you know, this whole continent's army rebels. And now we're here and there's a whole second continent that's about to be like, nah, we're good. So
yeah.
I don't know. It really puts some things into perspective.
Yeah. So. Totally. There's definitely, you kind of learn maybe the differences between what it says, what the Empire controls on paper and what that actually means in reality.
Right.
You know? India, thought. What did you think of the first sight of Coltane and the Imperial politics of Seven Cities?
The Imperial politics of Seven Cities seems to be a little unstable.
Oh, you think so?
I think that it's just a little... People are really starting to see Lassine. She's being seen for who she is.
Ah, they're seeing right through her.
Exactly. No, I don't really have much of a strong thought on that. I feel like this is just setting us up to, I don't know, to just see the inner workings more crumbling than them on the outside and how they're doing, how they're like conquering everything. It's more like now on the inside, they're falling apart and they're not going, and something's going to happen. It's a book. So I don't know, but
it's a book.
It's a book.
Yes.
I'm hoping that we get more of a look into like the very inner circle, more so than just like the random players on that are kind of on the inside, but more so on the outside doing like not making the direct actions. So I don't know.
Mm.
If that makes
like,
sense.
What do you mean by that? Do you feel like Malak Rel is on the outside, or are you like hoping to see High Fist Pormqual soon? The Malazan Fist of Seven Cities.
Well, I guess Malak seems kind of like he's, I can't really tell, like on the outside, kind of working on the outside, but I guess more so what is like I just, as always, I'm just looking for a purpose.
Well, you know what, listen, there's a council scene in the next chapter, so let's have a conversation about it then.
Yeah.
Josh, before we move on to chapter two, we see the first characters that we read about in the last book. We see Fiddler, Crocus, Kalam, and Apsalar. What did you think about seeing characters you had seen before and kind of returning to a plot line from Gardens of the Moon?
Well, henceforth, this group will be known as the Boys. And I know Apsalar's
new boys.
Yeah, but these are them boys, you know? So it was very nice. I slowly am realizing why I got a lot of feedback for saying fuck the bridge burners in the first book. Because maybe they are kind of cool. I don't know. just maybe. But it was interesting. They killed a whole ass sea monster. Which was there for a second. A sea monster which spoke into their brains and was like, I'll be granting you a quick death. And then they're like, we've got bombs. So
yeah,
it was great. I'm very excited for Fiddler to be more than like a character I literally only know because he plays the fiddle and maybe blows stuff up. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited.
In India, what did you think about their conversation about like maybe the true motive to come to Seven Cities and them thinking back on their Kalam's homeland?
So it's Crocus who really like was wondering why they were going the one way and then ended up instead of the other way, and why they had to stop and whatever. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Crocus starts kind of pushing them on it.
Yeah. So, and then they're like, all right, kid, the real reason is we're going to go and kill the scene now. And you're coming with us. Right? Right?
Yeah. They kind of put their cards on the table.
All right. Is that wise for them? Why was it this group of people? Like when there were so many, I guess.
Who do you think was more suited to
the other people that they left behind? The leader guy, what was his name?
Like Bring Whiskey Jack.
Yeah, and then the other guy with the sword.
Mm.
Do you mean Trotz? Perrin? Yeah, but Perrin threw the sword out.
Oh, he did?
He threw it.
Yeah, but he has the Odotaro's sword now. But
that's what I meant.
Right.
Why? Like, I don't know. I don't get why the. I guess the one guy is a magic man.
I guess like Whiskey Jack is a high profile and I guess is like serving in the army.
I thought they army.
They have been outlawed.
And that's why I thought they were scared to like, well, that's why they have to be like so top secret about going into this place because they could recognized.
They're being furtive. Kalam is an ex-claw and an assassin, you know? So I think that's the sense in my mind.
Okay.
Alrighty. Well, let's keep it moving then. Chapter 2. Omens of Dryjna and the Year of the Apocalypse mark the city walls. Diker visits the tribal camps on the outskirts of Hisar. A boy offers prophetic visions from Dryjna of the blood that will come to Seven Cities. A goat-headed figure in the shadows witnesses the ritual as well. Diker heads to the council meeting to discuss the arrival of Coltane. The Wiccan commander is there, along with his right-hand man, Bolt, the Malazan Culp, and the Jistal priest, Malak Rel. Diker recounts with the Wiccans when they both met on the battlefield. The historian traveled with Dujek's army long ago. Sormo Enath, the Wiccan's principal warlock, arrived. Sormo is a boy that is a vessel for many souls. He wears a goat's head, and together with Diker, they discuss the omens for the coming rebellion. Malak Rel delivers the High Fist's command. Admiral Molnach and the Malazan fleet have departed. The Wiccans and the Seventh are to walk 1,200 miles overland to kneel at Pormqual's feet in Arryn. Bolt finds this absurd and kicks the priest out of the council. Dyker cautions him, but Coltane does not care. The council discusses how High Fist Pormqual is derelict in his duties, and that merchants like Malak Rel make most of the decisions in Seven Cities. After the council, Colt discloses to Dyker that he is nervous about the warlock Sormo Enath. Dyker responds with a request that Colt travels to the Otataro mines of Seven Cities and free an old friend, the historian Haboric Lighttouch. Plum goes off to find old contacts in the city. To occupy himself, Fiddler disguises himself and travels into the city of Erlatan. Red Blades, an ally of the Malazan, are culling those who would be associated with the rebellion. Fiddler saves two girls and returns them to their home. Fiddler encounters a Tano Spiritwalker, Kimlock. They discuss the convergence of shapeshifters on the continent and the path of hands that will lead to ascendancy. Kimlock offers him a prophecy, but Fiddler declines and they discuss Raraku. Afterwards, Fiddler returns, worrying about Kalam and Absalar. Kalam meets Mebra, a Seven Cities native but Malazan spy. Mebra offers him the Holy Book of Dryjna and a promise. If Kalam delivers the Holy Book across the desert, he will have a safe passage across the continent. He must give it to Shaik, the leader of the rebellion, and it will raise the whirlwind in the holy desert of Uraku. Kalam agrees. Lestara Yil, the commander of the Red Blades, watch from the shadows. The captain and her second-in-command, Henna Baralta, will track Kalam across the desert to find Shaik. Mappo and Ikarium are attacked by divers in the Panpots Odan. The soul-taken, Mesremb, greets Mappo, then continues his own journey on the Path of Hands. They are atop a cliff on the edge of the holy desert Uraku and are approached by the High Priest of Shadow, Iskarl Pus. Ikarium forgets. He forgets that the leopard attacked, only noticing that they had been hurt. He asks Mappo what has happened, and Mappo lies. So we kind of got an introduction to the characters in Hisar, but in this chapter, we really have the whole council scene, and it's preceded by some apocalyptic visions on the outskirts of the city. Josh, what did you think of Coltane, the conflict between him and Malak Rel, and his maybe contentious arrival into Hisar?
So, I feel like it's pretty interesting that Coltane is kind of a similar mindset in some ways as High Fist Dujek over in Ganabacus. You know, both of them kind of see some flaws in the Empire. Coltane is much more just like, nah, fuck 'em, you know?
Yeah.
Or at the very least, I'll say this. He says some stuff that makes him seem sympathetic to Lassine, which was interesting. But he is very much like, I'm going to take command. I'm going to use my soldiers the way I think they should be used. And I think that's, I'm very interested to see what he thinks that is. Is he going to, like, stir the rebellion? Is he going to try to suppress it? Is he going to try and wait to see what happens? I don't know. I'm very interested in it. He's like, for someone that is immediately painted as this, like, barbarian, brainless guy, he seems pretty with it. Like, he's got a pretty good tactical mind.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be pretty cool. I love that he instantly sends out Malak Rel, which is just the powerest of power plays.
Yeah, he's got. And Coltane definitely has no time for games.
Yeah, but that was a very good council scene. I felt like in the first book we did not get a ton of political maneuvering, and I'm thinking we may get a bit more here.
India, what was your first impressions of Coltane and this kind of council scene and the command that Coltane should take his army overland across the whole continent?
So he seemed at first, like, I feel like I agree with Josh in that he seems more calculated than it shows. And I do think that he is going to, I think he's going to not suppress the rebellion. I feel like he's going to probably maybe lead it or be a big part of it. And I think that he is saying that the sympathetic things, I don't know, like more sort of like seem like he's on her side, like he's more fair, but I really don't think that he is interested in her at all. I feel like she kind of like, maybe he feels like cast off, I don't know, but by her, but I feel like he's going to come and take that ass down. Yeah, right? No?
I see. I don't know.
He seems like a little bitter. Maybe not.
He, to me, is definitely someone who like was defeated by the Empire and has now joined them, but also, but like also has no time for bullshit. Like that he's like a part of the Empire, but, and now he's going to fight for them. But that doesn't mean he's going to like fucking put up with Malak Rel. Yeah. And what did you, did either of you have any thoughts about Sormo Enath, the boy warlock?
It's kind of fucked up.
Is he, so he's not himself, right?
He is the male fucked up version of what happened to Tattersail.
Oh, that's, yeah. So he is himself just as a child.
Yeah, he got put into a boy's body.
Yes, that's uncomfortable. Okay, yeah. I get it now.
Yep.
You know, as we all do.
Yeah, except unlike Tattersail, who's this, like, cool, fun, flirty lady, this is, like, some ancient warlock who seems, like, kind of fucking wild.
Hmm. Hey, you don't know. Maybe Sormo Enath's just as flirty.
Maybe Sormo Enath fucks. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. anyway. that was Josh's joke, not mine. Before they leave, Diker asks Culp to travel to the Oda Terra Mines to free Haborik. Do we think he's going to do it?
Yes.
Of course he will.
That's called plot.
Plot. Alrighty then. India, elsewhere we see Kalam, and he goes off to do his own thing, so Fiddler...
Is this because he's in his own city where he lives?
Yeah, like...
Okay, he's just, like, catching up.
He's, like, back on his... He's back on his home turf, so he's like, oh, let me, you know...
Let me slide on by.
He's taking some agency. Yeah. So Fiddler kind of goes and has this whole interaction with Kimlock, and they talk about a ton of stuff. What'd you take away from this?
Is Fiddler from here, too, and he had a history with this person?
No. Fiddler is not from here originally. Oh, however, the Bridge Burners did come to Seven Cities when it was originally being conquered by the Malazan. So it's not his first time on the continent, but he is not a native like Kalam or Quickman.
Okay. And then Kimlock. Is this person soul taken?
No. Oh. She's kind of just like a shaman, seeress, spirit walker type person. You know, she has visions and sings. She sings these songs, you know. And the songs like guide you into ascendancy.
Yeah, so like they're like metaphors. No.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. Okay. Well, whatever. I have that was an odd. This whole beginning is odd. I can't really tell who anyone is. And I don't know. I have no thoughts because...
Josh, do you have any thoughts about Kimlock and the Tano Spirit Walker?
Yeah, Kimlock the Tano Spirit Walker is maybe my favorite character. And I think I'm never going to see him again. And I'm pretty fucking devastated. I loved him. He was great.
What's with this love? This is a lot of love.
Well, he was just kind of like, what's up? I'm Kimlock. I essentially have as much power as a whole god, and I'm just here chilling with my grandkids. I don't take many visitors because everyone hates my guts because they think I'm a traitor to the cause, but like, really, I didn't feel like killing 80,000 people just so that more people would come and eventually kill all of the civilians.
Yeah.
That's, like, the dude knows what he's about.
Wow. I have
your
such...
reaction is really making me worried that he's going to murder a child in cold blood. You seem very lukewarm with Kimlock.
I'm just, I have
is he going
so...
to is he going to strangle a dog? Like, what
I'm
does
just
he do
so
bad?
This is just the hot, like the hottest Spirit Walker take I've heard. You know, I just was so surprised to hear this love.
Listen,
for Kimlock,
when,
you know,
when Erickson introduces a character who can sing someone into being a god, that's my exact shit. So
I see. It's a dream of yours to sing people into godhood. Yeah.
Usually I just sing them into the next room.
Nice.
You know?
While Fiddler is speaking with the spirit walker, Kalam,
yeah,
goes and gets the Book of Dryzhna and sets off to give it to the leader of the rebellion so that she can start the whirlwind and the year of the apocalypse and everything. India, what did you think of Kalam's choice to take this apocalyptic book and deliver it to the leader of the rebellion to ensure safe passage across the continent?
It seems a little risky. Seems like risky business, but...
Definitely a bit risky business.
But, I mean, really, did he really have a choice at the end of the
what
day?
What do you mean?
He's bartering. So, and it's going to make for a good story. I don't know. Well, he wants to get through the place. He needs to do, and how to, I guess that's how he's going to have to do it. So, also...
Josh, do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a shit plan, but...
but he has no choice!
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, his options are, like, go across the desert where they're definitely going to get killed, go into the desert to bring this super powerful person, start a rebellion, and maybe they won't get killed.
Mm.
You know?
I do know. The Red Blades are going to follow them, and they're allied with the Malazans. Do you think... any thoughts about what might happen there?
Something bad?
I'd say a fight.
That sounds good. I would agree with that.
Hot takes in there.
A quick battle.
A quick little
Peter,
scuffle.
I can't tell what you're... Are you trying to, like, hint us towards something?
Here. Do you want to... Here. Here's my hot take I got it. Shut up. All right? They're going to get to the seer. They will have been followed the whole time. They think they do everything correct. And then... The Red Blades get discovered, and there's this big misunderstanding, and everyone's like, you're working for the Malazans, and then they all die.
No.
There we go. That's my take.
The reason I was saying is because I just feel like, especially in these first chapters of the book, like, everyone's kind of being situated on the continent and getting their own thing and, like, kind of having a task to themselves in some way. And I feel like, especially with, like, it just feels like it in this scene, Erickson's, like, putting a little powder keg into the book, and I was just trying to have everyone read on it.
Mm. Yeah, you definitely read this book from a higher level than I do.
Yes, agreed.
I'm very, very surface. This is what's happening right now. Like, I'm not thinking about the strategic placements.
I'm also rereading the book, so I guess there's...
I think that's a good idea.
Did you read these?
I should start trying to do that.
You're going to start rereading the book?
No.
She's just going to read Garden to the Moon until she understands it, like, perfectly. Over and over again.
Yes, exactly.
A Sisyphean task. Alrighty. And then finally, we return to Mappo and Ikarium, and we see them attack. They kind of meet up with some shapeshifters again. They meet the High Priest of Shadow, Skarl Pust, and then Ikarium kind of forgets a lot of stuff. Josh, what did you think of this?
The ending was tragically sad. Like, so, you know, it's only been two chapters, but he has said several times that he doesn't want to kill things. And does he, like, when he kills people, does he just forget, you know, like, a bunch of stuff, like, the last portion of his life? Because that's upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that's the case, maybe there's other things, but, like, that's kind of what it seems like. I do want to say Skarl Pust is my second favorite character after Kimlok.
Mm. And why is that?
Well, he sat with his legs crossed for so long that he got a cramp, and then he yelled at a donkey to fix it. And then the donkey ran away and came back a man. And
It's
very Don Quixote for me.
Mm.
And I'm into it.
Well, we will see a Skarl Pust again, and he is a character that is close to my heart.
Hell yeah.
God. Great.
You sound excited, India.
I'm really into it. Why does this guy not remember anything when he kills animal tigers? I don't know. Leopard.
Maybe it's a curse.
We'll definitely learn more about Ikarium.
Like, yeah, I'm really... That's an intriguing thing. I love these mind-fucked people. They're so interesting.
And what do you think about Mappo kind of...
lying?
You know, yeah.
I don't know why he... That's what's... I don't know. I don't know why he's doing it. Is he doing it to protect him or...
Yeah, I don't know. It's a mystery.
Well, no, it's not.
He's got to be protecting him, right? That or, like, maybe there's, like, a... Maybe if he finds out, he'll go crazy or something.
Yeah, that's just what I'm wondering.
Like, I don't know. I got a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, listen, I think that's maybe about it for us here on the beginning of Deadhouse Gates.
Wait.
Oh, please.
We didn't even gloss over the fact about the tattooed man with no hands.
That was the prologue.
Why doesn't he have hands? Why did they chop the hands off?
I think because he probably was real good at magic or some shit, right?
Oh, it's fucked up.
I believe he used to actually be a thief, and his hands got cut off.
That's what he said. I think he did say that, yes.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. I like having my hands.
Hands are awesome.
Yes, that's part of my hot take for the day.
Really important part of my life is having hands. Yeah, we just glossed fingers over it, and I wanted to discuss it because I just looked at his little picture, and I was like, what happened?
And plus, he's all inked up, you know?
Yeah, he's team tatted.
Tatted, yes, to put it mildly.
And
alrighty.
These are just all people questions. So, Is Coltane part bird?
No, he just has a lot of, like,
feathers.
Accents. Yeah, he just is wearing a lot of feathers, yeah.
Because it said crow, and then I thought of him as that person that was a bird.
I missed that, apparently. I didn't hear any of that stuff.
No, he's, like, of the crow clan. There's a lot of crow fetishes, you know.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I get that.
Well, you know when you're looking at crows and then you're like, oh, man, they're so sick. And you start pulling each feather off individually and make a large cape for yourself.
Yeah, obviously.
We've all been there.
Obviously. Yeah, of course.
It's a Tuesday, say we all. Man.
It's a Tuesday.
It is a Tuesday. All right. That was it.
Well, that's about it for us here today. Thanks for everyone for bearing with us between Gardens of the Moon and Deadhouse Gates. But, the move has been completed. I am safe, and the Trans-Pacific podcast has occurred. This is the plan. Anywho's, tweet at us at @very10bookbooks. Send us an email and let us know what you think about, you know, the change of pace, and that when, you know, it's a huge change to just kind of flip into all new characters and a whole new setting. So maybe we'll talk about in the next show. We're trying to get stuff like that going. Anyway, I think for next week, we're going to be reading Roraku chapters 3, 4, and 5. So we look forward to seeing it then. But before we go, Josh Baker, do you have any predictions about what is going to be happening on Seven Cities?
I mean, I can only hope that Kalam and them start traveling, and I don't know. I actually don't think they're going to catch the Red Blades for a while. I think they're going to get, you know, they're going to be going unnoticed. Mostly, I cannot wait to see what the fuck is up with Iskarl Pust and his weird shadow tower.
You're trying to get in on the Iskarl Pust life.
Trying to figure out my boy Pust, you know?
Something you're actually going to miss out on with
you know
Iskarl
what I
Pust.
Always say, man? Pust or bust, you know?
There you go.
I love that.
Thank you.
India will be able to affirm, especially the more we read it, as the audiobook has a great Krupa voice, it has a great Iskarl Pust voice. So,
can't wait. I expect a full impression next week, India.
Of course, India will do it.
I would love to.
India, well, you predictions for you for Seven Cities,
Felicin.
No, lay it down.
Here's exactly what's going to happen. Any person or group that was mentioned in these first two chapters plus prologue that's exactly who we are going to meet in the next three chapters. So I'm talking definitely Red Blades, definitely anyone else who we didn't meet, and we'll see what happens with that. So it's going to be now, we've just plotted on the one side. The next three chapters, we're going to plot on the next side. And then
are
after
you just
that,
saying we're going to see the characters again?
We're going to meet the characters that we didn't meet yet, that they were talking about.
I see.
And then after we meet those characters, learn their agenda, that's when we're going to start colliding. Those are my thoughts.
We're going to go to Darujistan, so to speak.
We're going to go to... No, we're not. There's no way we go to fucking Darujistan.
No, not yet.
I was on Reddit. I understand what you're saying. It was a metaphor. Keep going. I'm just over
Yes. We're going to meet the other cast of characters than content, you mean.
Yep.
Yeah, well, only the ones that have been mentioned, because now we need to know what their shit is and what their spiel is.
I understand.
Those are my thoughts.
Well, listen, I'm excited to get further in the book and to keep talking about it. And well, thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Whew, a little rusty.
Yeah, a little bit.
Hello, everyone. Producer AJ here for the first time in season two. Like Peter said in the episode, thank you so much for sticking with us while we got our recording schedule figured out after Peter's big move to Japan. And we promise from now on, we'll maintain our bi-weekly schedule. Apologies also if you noticed some audio issues in the episode. We're working on getting them sorted out as well. And now to the proper credits. Thanks to Dan Geserich for making our new and improved season two logo. We really love it. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Geserich for the hottest new iPhone takes. And of course, all the music from the show comes from Amaranthine's album Simulant Rain, which you can find on Bandcamp, where they've also recently released some brand new music, which I highly recommend. Links to their pages will be in the show notes. And 10 Very Big Books will be back in 2 weeks on September 27th with the next few chapters of Deadhouse Gates. As always, keep sending us your feedback on Twitter and Gmail at 10 Very Big Books and 10 Very Big Books at gmail.com. And thank you so much for listening.